One.
Boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to your favorite baseball podcast. We are Losses Above Replacement. I'm Splash, joined today by Mac and Alex. Alex, cue that intro.
It's time for Losses Above Replacement. We are here to give you baseball facts.
Yeah, darn
That was
right.
fantastic, Alex.
I
That was
am a
beautiful.
legendary songman.
That was beautiful. So much for paying a guy on Fiverr to do an intro for us when we have an Alex. So
Yeah,
shout
you
out to
got.
Alex. Shout out to the Pac-12, and shout out to everyone not named the New England Patriots. So on today's docket, we're going to talk about Jim Leland. We're going to talk about what's going to happen with Shohei Ohtani, Juan Soto, and the likes. And we're going to break down a massive trade that I saw yesterday while stocking shelves at my grocery store. So Braves Mariners fans, prepare for that. But first, let's talk about the man, the myth, the legend, the cigar smoking man, the beast himself, Jim Leland. Rockies legend, of course. Didn't manage for any other teams, of course. He definitely didn't manage to three pennant winning sides or one World Series winning side, but hey, he managed for the Rockies. So guys, Jim Leland is heading to the Hall of Fame as of yesterday. What's one word you use to describe Jim Leland?
Old-fashioned. Like, he was one of those old-fashioned type guys. And to be fair, he was very, very good at it. He was an amazing manager that did so much for all these clubs, including, Detroit did a ton with them. Again, he's a one-time World Series winner, three-time pennant winner, three-time manager of the year with an over 500 win-loss percentage, which over nearly 3,500 games, that's pretty darn good, I'm gonna say. Like, I think right now the biggest thing that's going to comes down for Leland is that he did only have one World Series to him, as well as the fact that the winning percentage was so even at that point. So that's what makes things feel a little bit weird, but his style was something that people still kind of try to emulate a little bit today. Whenever you think of old-fashioned manager, a lot of people immediately think of Jim Leland.
So, my word, I'm just going to go with successful. I mean, you look at the teams that he managed, and it was just nothing but success, really, other than his 1 year on the Rockies. I mean, he took over the Pirates when they were sort of rebuilding their reputation in 1986, and he was eventually able to bring them to the playoffs in three consecutive years. Even if it meant, he clashed with Barry Bonds a little bit, and it was caught on camera at one point. And then with the Marlins, the Marlins were a young franchise, and he took them to the World Series. He made them at the time the fastest team ever to win a World Series. And then with the Tigers, I mean, the Tigers were in a real dark era in their franchise, a few years removed from losing 119 games. His first year as a manager, they make the World Series, and even after a brief lull, I'll say this: he only had one losing season in Detroit. He won the division in 2011, 2012, and 2013. He just had a ton of success, and he knew how to get the most out of his rosters. So I think Jim Leland, I feel like he almost gets lost in the shuffle when it comes to all the great managers he had to compete against, like Joe Torre. But he's fully deserving of this honor.
Yeah, and you look at the teams he managed, and the Pirates, after Leland leaves in 96, took another 15, 16 years to be remotely good again, right? The Marlins, outside of the Island World Series they have, haven't been good. The Rockies aren't a historically successful franchise. And the Tigers, like Max said, just 3 years before Leland came over, they lost 119 games and were one of the worst teams in the history of baseball. So, I know the winning percentage is not crazy. It's just a 506, and it's only 41 games over 500, and he was below 500 in three or four stops. But I mean, you win three divisions with Pittsburgh. You're like two games away from going to three different World Series, or two different World Series with Pittsburgh in 91 and 92. Go Braves, by the way. But I think he's a great manager, and I'm glad to see he's in the Hall of Fame. I wish Lou Piniella joined him, but that's a story for
Agreed.
another time. But sometimes you have to look at the context here, and the context of this fact is you go to two expansion teams, both 93 expansion teams. So he's the manager there in their first decade. I can understand not winning 100 games with them. Pittsburgh, on either side of Leland Senior, wasn't very good. And they win 95-plus games three times in a row, and they're, you know, a game away from the World Series in both 91 and 92. And then with Detroit, you pull them from the ashes. You win 95 games in 06. You win 95 games in 11. You win 93 games in 13. And if it wasn't for the power of beards, you have another World Series appearance in 2013. So, and he's a guy that was eerily close to having six World Series appearances. And I think that's a Hall of Fame manager. Is he the best manager ever? Maybe not. But
I want to throw it out there also that you were mentioning how, you know, the Pirates and the Marlins fell off after he left. I mean, look at what's happened to the Tigers since. I mean, they made the playoffs in 2014 and got swept. They have not won a single playoff game since Jim Leland retired. And I think it speaks volumes about what he did for that team. And, you know, they've only had one winning season, I guess two winning seasons since 2014. So, I mean, it's just, you know, they were way different before he got there. They've been way different after. So, yeah, like I said, it speaks volumes about what he can do to a team.
Mm-hmm. One thing I do want to kind of, like, figure out with you guys, and this is something that's, you know, I think is kind of inconsequential because it's not always his decision on it, and that is that when he was with the Tigers, he did get a lot of help from ownership, getting a lot of amazing players here, and yet didn't get the big one with them. Do you think that hurts, like, his argument at all?
I think this is the sort of the conversation we have with the Hall of Fame, just from a larger perspective. You can be a Hall of Famer, a player, manager, pioneer, whatever, without being the best. And I think that's okay, right? We're going to elect Adrian Beltre to the Hall of Fame this year. Is he the best third baseman of all time? Maybe not, but he's clearly a Hall of Famer, right? Or are we going to elect Carlos Beltran? Is he the best center fielder ever? No, but he's plenty good enough. And I think Jim Leland falls into that same category, that he didn't happen to win a championship, or he just won the one championship with Florida, and he came close with Detroit, but both World Series appearances were dashed, and the late playoff losses in other seasons, you kind of look at those and say, well, Detroit was the better team. You have Scherzer and Verlander and Miggy and Prince and this great depth, but you got to give Leland credit for getting those incredibly talented teams to reach a high level of potential. We see every year that these super teams, these big money teams, these teams loaded with all-stars, they collapse. They get broken up at the trade deadline. You know, they're shipping Max Scherzer to Texas and Justin Verlander to Houston. Sorry, Mac. Or they're the Angels, right? So there's something to be said when you get a team in that situation, and they just ran into a buzzsaw known as the 2013 Red Sox, right? You run into a Rangers team in 2011. So you have this goofy, like, playoff series are inherently random. So getting your team to win 95 games, getting them at the top of the division, putting them in the situation, I think is plenty of value. Is he the best manager ever? No, but there's plenty of value in being, you know, a top, I don't know, top five manager for an extended time, top three manager for an extended time, a great manager for an extended time.
Yeah, and also that 2012 season where they eventually lost to the Giants, but they only won 88 games in the regular season. They looked very beatable. I remember they were facing a red hot Oakland team in the ALDS, and they beat them in five games. You know, Verlander throws a shutout in Oakland to end the ALDS. They sweep the Yankees in the ALDS, who were probably the favorites to come out of the American League that year. And I mean, they recovered from a brutally slow start to win the division. So, you know, like Slash said, it does speak volumes that he was able to eventually rally his team. So I think, while I'm not going to say he's necessarily the greatest manager of all time, or he's not even, I wouldn't say he's necessarily Bruce Bochy, who has a sub 500 regular season record but four World Series rings. I still think that he deserves a ton of credit for getting his teams as far as they got.
Yeah, I can agree with that. And that is something that, you know, a lot of people are going to give him credit for, especially. Going back to what I said a minute ago about him being this old-fashioned manager, I think that's what you need in a lot of different teams nowadays. And I'm not going to say that is the best way to manage, not by a long shot. In fact, I think it's probably around near the lower bits. But when you have a lot of egos on a team, when you have a lot of high-level players that all think that they're the superstar on that team, it takes a special kind of manager to be able to tell and work with all of them to completely actually work together, which doesn't happen very often a lot of times, as we've seen big teams collapse through egos. And he was able to keep the egos in check, able to keep players in line and make sure that they did their jobs. Did it ultimately always end up in success? No. But it's never going to always be in success. But I got to give him credit for what he was able to do.
Absolutely. So congratulations on a Hall of Fame career, Jim Leland, Rockies legend, Marlins legend, Pirates legend, Tigers legend. So with that said, let's move on to a potential Braves legend, at least if you look at Braves Twitter in the last 24 hours. The Braves and Mariners made a trade. The centerpiece of the trade is former top prospect of the New York Mets, Jared Kelnick, looking to be the everyday left fielder for the Atlanta Braves, joined by Marco Gonzalez and Evan White. And the Mariners in this deal acquiring Jackson Kowar and Cole Phillips, a top 10 prospect from the Braves organization. So, of course, we have a Mariners fan and a Braves fan here. So instead of going to them for analysis, Mac, let's start with you as the original member of the Kelnick hype train.
Yeah, so first of all, I want to say that the Mets won that trade. I'm just going to say it now. Or sorry, Brody Van Wagenen did. But anyways, here's my take. So the Marco Gonzalez and Evan White part of the deal, I think, is very much a salary dump. I mean, the Braves are already planning to move Gonzalez in another trade. And really, he was injured most of this year. He only has a career 98 ERA plus and really doesn't keep the ball in the yard for a guy who's supposed to be a stinker baller. So, A, I don't think he had a spot on the Mariners roster. And B, I don't think he would have had a spot on the Braves roster had they kept him. And then White, I mean, I really don't know what White's situation is going to be in Atlanta because they have Matt Olson at first base and he's on that contract. So the Mariners, if I'm not mistaken, cleared about $25 million off their books in this deal. So here's the deal with Kelenic is that, yes, he took a step forward this year, but really he struggled badly from about May 1st on. I saw he had a sub-600 OPS. From that point on, and he still strikes out a really high rate, over 30, almost 32%. His fat cast numbers honestly aren't all that encouraging, especially only a 435 expected slugging, only a 321 weighted on base percentage, only a 333 xWOBA. As a Mets fan, my biggest concern is that Jared Kelenic is in the NL East now. I've seen this movie so many times before. Even this past year when the Mets played the Orioles for a weekend and James McCann tore them up. Jared Kelenic is going to torment the Mets now. And this is the one reason I'm worried about this deal as a Mets fan, is that they're going to have to face Kelenic a dozen times for the next few years. And I feel like he's probably going to turn into primary bonds against them. So that's my bit of analysis. I actually think the Mariners have got a decent return. I think Kowar is an intriguing arm. He's a former first round pick, throws hard. And Cole Phillips, while he hasn't been healthy since he got drafted, he is a ton of upside. And I think, you know, the Mariners have so many arms, but he's a guy who I definitely think can make an impact at the big league level.
I do want to throw it in there that the Mariners did send some cash considerations to the Braves.
I think it was about $4.5 million, something like that.
Ah, okay. I didn't know the exact figure, but
it's around that. I'm not sure if that's the exact.
Yeah, there's some cash that went in. And of course, both teams are probably going to make more moves here. I also don't kind of get the Evan White piece. First base only.
Purely to get out of that contract.
Yeah, that's what first base only. I don't imagine he's going to see much time in Atlanta, if any. Marco Gonzalez, I think he has a place in the Braves rotation. He'd probably be the five right now behind a Strider, Freed, Why am I blanking on a name? Charlie Morton and Bryce Elder, who please, Bryce Elder, please. But he'd probably be the five right now. Then you're looking at like Reynaldo Lopez as a swingman type. But of course, both teams can still make moves. You know, I'll jump in with my take here. This presents an odd situation for Atlanta in left field with Jared Kelnick and Vaughn Grissom as the expected platoon here. And I don't know how to feel about it. You know, Eddie Rosario, for all his flaws, was a, you know, reasonable hitter last year. And Kevin Pillar was actually not a reasonable hitter, but I always felt like he was going to come through with a big hit just every single time. And he was awesome defensively. He was just like the energy guy that I don't really care that he had an OPS plus in the 80s or an OPS in like the 600s for most of the season, but he just always came through when it mattered, it felt like, and he made great plays defensively. So I think Kelnick is like a minor, he's an upgrade over Rosario in the field. And you have more upside at the plate, I guess. But Rosario is a guy that is going to lean, you know, he had a 100 OPS plus last season, 450 slug, hit 21 home runs, hit 24 doubles. So I don't know. I think it's a largely lateral move there. And it really depends on what you get out of Vaughn Grissom if you're getting this platoon. But you are downgrading massively defensively without Pillar in. Pillar was, you know, often deployed as like center field backup if Harris got pulled from a game, or right field backup if Acuña got pulled from a game. So can miss Pillar, and of course going to miss 2021 NLCS MVP postseason legend Eddie Rosario. But I guess I'm intrigued with Kelnick. He's not expected to reach free agency until 2029, I believe. And Vaughn Grissom in left field, he's hit at the major league level before. We're going to pretend he didn't just end our season, but I don't know. It kind of makes me feel like
it's a tough thing with the small sample size. It's tough. It's, you know,
right. And even Kelnick, he had a good season on the whole last year, like, you know, above 100 OPS plus, above average defensively, you know, all this. He was actually better against left-handed pitching than I thought he would be. But I don't know. And then Vaughn Grissom's a guy that's hit 287, but hasn't brought much else to the table. He's one of the rare guys that like hits 280 or 280 last year, but had a 78 OPS plus because he had three doubles, one triple, and zero home runs in 80 plate appearances. So maybe he gets back a little bit more of what he did in 2020 or 2022 with a 440 slug and a 353 on base. But I don't know. I kind of feel like weird about it. Alex, what say you?
All right. Well, this is my take. I'm not even really going to touch what the Braves sent over to Seattle. Because honestly, like I said, I don't know a whole lot about the guys that came over. If you're getting a nice prospect, okay. If you're getting, you know, a decent arm, okay. That's not what I want to talk about here. What I'm talking about is what you gave away and what it means. So I like this trade for Seattle up until Kelnick. Getting rid of Marco Gonzalez, as much as I like that he's a great clubhouse presence, he is an amazing leader on that team. He's not making the rotation. I mean, no disrespect to legend Marco Gonzalez, but when you have a rotation that includes guys like Luis Castillo, Logan Gilbert, George Kirby, and these other young guys as well, then it's going to be really hard to even try to compete for a spot, not to mention with Robbie Ray coming back as well. Where a lot of this starts to get a little bit weird for me is that there is... I've seen this story before, and that's why I'm scared. That's why I'm nervous. Because we've seen a lot of times where this team, specifically the Mariners, will sell off a lot of pieces, say we're going to add back more, and then don't. And then just stand pat. Seattle cannot do that right now. At this point right now, from all the releases and all that have happened so far, you are now missing two outfielders, a second baseman, a third baseman, and a DH. how are you going to fill all that? And not to mention as well that even if you do make a big trade, which if you do make a big trade, say for like Juan Soto, then a lot of this is going to make sense. But if you don't, there's going to be an issue. I will say there was a little bit of hope that did come to me with this. Because as much as I liked Evan White's first year with Seattle, minus the batting, his contract was an albatross. He signed a massive deal while in the minor leagues, and that locked him up for several years at a pretty high pay rate, thinking that, all right, we're going to spend a good bit more money on you now, so we don't have to pay you as much later. And it didn't work out. It did. He kept getting injured, kept breaking his hip. You know what? It happens. So glad you're able to get that money off of your payroll, as well as Marco Gonzalez. You need to add on with this, though. That is what is going to be the decider of everything this offseason. If you do not add on, if you do not improve the team, because right now, the moves that you have done right now, you have only lost a large amount of starters, a large amount of players, and I'm not seeing how it's all going to be filled in. I'm not expecting, you know, what was his name? The new third baseman that Seattle got.
Luis Urias?
Yeah, thank you, Urias. I'm not expecting him to be a good third baseman. I'm not expecting anyone that we have currently at second base to do great. I mean, Caballero's your best bet, but even or that.
Josh Rojas.
Oh, yeah, and Rojas, but I'm going to be real. I don't trust Rojas a whole lot. And then now who do you have in the outfield? Taylor Trammell? Who do you have in the outfield? Putting in Dylan Moore there every day? Like, no.
Okay, respect Don, Dylan Don, Moore.
Don I like Dylan Moore. Moore. I
he
really
was on my
like
fantasy
Dylan
team
Moore.
3 years ago. Respect
I like Dylan Moore, but I also don't want to see him as your everyday right or left fielder. Where Dylan Moore's amazing like ability really comes in is that he's a super utility man who can play every position on the diamond and except pitcher and catcher. And I'm sure if he asked nicely, he would do that too.
No, he would do both those things.
Exactly. He would be Andrew Romine doing all of them in one game if he could.
Hey, if you needed a catcher and pitcher, call up Luis Torrens again. What's he doing nowadays?
He just got released, I believe.
Oh, really?
By Seattle, by the way.
Good job, Seattle.
I love Luis Torrens. I love him so much.
Yeah, man.
Anyway,
what's Abraham Toro doing nowadays?
Let's just keep going, please.
How many random second basemen have the Mariners had, like in the last like 3 years?
Adam Frazier.
Oh Lord.
Yeah.
I'm done with that line of thing. What I do want to say with this right now, there is a lot of uprising going on right now, and I'm gonna leave it with this. I was talking with some family the other day, and I was ranting after the Eugenio Suarez trade, which we've already talked about it on here. I'm not going into that rant again. But my mom Googled the word Mariners just to try to get some extra news that was going on. The first result after Googling the word Mariners, it wasn't talking about the team, it wasn't the team's homepage. No, it was the Mariners are embarrassing themselves and their fan base. An article about what is going on with this team. And right now, unless something big happens, it's correct. They are in a horrible position right now.
Yeah, you know, here's my thing is that it's great to have, you know, this vision of, oh, we're clearing salary space to sign players or to make a trade, but I feel like you're kind of working things backwards here. You're supposed to secure your players first and then maybe, you know, clear some salary. So I understand the vision sort of, you know, getting the salary off the books, but I don't know if this is the right process necessarily. The other thing I want to point out is how crazily different Seattle and New York are, because if Jared Kelenic was in New York, the fan base would be begging to trade him after he underperformed those first 2 years. And look, I'm going to point to something that David Stern said today, which is that he is confident in Brett Beatty and Mark Vientos and Ronnie Mauricio to play third base next year. And the reaction from the fan base is that they want to give up on all three of them already. So I just want to point out how it's insane how different our two fan bases are, because Mariners fans are clearly not happy that they just traded Kelenic. Well, Mets fans, if they saw how badly he struggled and he played in New York, they would have been begging to trade him after like a week in the majors.
There was a lot of talk of Seattle trying to trade Kelenic and the fans wanting Kelenic gone too. But at the same time, right now, Seattle's looking for any level of stability. Like, think about it this way, right? When you are just like in regular life, if you get hit with something hard, like let's say the Eugenio Suarez trade, just in for the Mariners' sake, right? You're looking for any level of being secure. Because right now, you just had one of your best players shipped away. Shipped away for not a whole lot. And you're looking for any level of stability. And now your big prospect that has been hyped up for years, for several years, and it finally gets up to the big leagues and struggles at the beginning, yes, but then finally starts to have that stride last year. You're like, okay, we're finally starting to see the fruits. The fruits are going to be here. They're almost here. And then you give them away right then. That's teasing is what that's called. And that hurts.
You know, the funny part to me is this Alex Anthopoulos narrative that as soon as the trade happened, it's just across the world, it's, oh, the Braves fleece the Mariners. And that's just the funniest thing to me that we go from this. We don't even know if Jared Kelenic is good at baseball for consistent stretches. But of course, Alex Anthopoulos makes the trade, and now he's going to turn into prime Derek Jeter. I don't know
how pretty much
Derek Jeter. Yeah. And he can't wear 10 with the Braves because of certain Larry Wayne Jones. But you might as well wear 10 when he plays the Mets. I guess that's what's going to happen.
Probably. That's probably what's going to happen. I've already seen it.
So
yeah, that's
about right. With that, let's move on to a player that's maybe a slight bit better than Jared Kelenic. He hasn't played the field much, but I don't know. He pitches. He hits. He's pretty valuable. He had a 10-WAR season last year. Let's talk about Shohei Ohtani. We are back to three words only. Fellas, tell me where Shohei Ohtani is playing in April. Alex, let's start with you.
All right. Well, let's start this off. So the prompt is, where is he playing in April, or is the prompt to Shohei Ohtani?
Where's, I mean, I guess you can take it any direction you want to take it, but yeah, where is he playing in April? Well,
all right, I'm going to do the first. I'm going to do just him right now first, and then I'll get to the player. Three words for that are dragging it out. Like, there was a lot of talk that he was going to sign during the winter meetings, and it just came out. No, he's not going to.
It's not happening.
Can we point happen. Out the winter meetings are not actually taking place in the winter?
Yeah, I know that. I find that
weird,
right?
And spring training starts in the winter?
Yeah. Look, baseball's weird anyway. Like, I understand why he could be dragging us out a little bit, but you know what? Honestly, it gives me a little more hope. The more and more he drags it out, because other teams can start getting into this. Other teams can start figuring out, which will lead me to, where does he play in, like, play in April? My three words only. I'm still on this damn train. Come to Seattle. The chant was that I know it has been said that it's like that the team is out on him. The team is freeing up a ton of cap. The team has been freeing up so much money to where I think there's a legitimate chance that no one, like, that he's been working with Seattle, that Seattle's been trying to do something with him, and it's just not gotten reported. Let me dream, okay?
All right, Mac, what are your three words around Shohei Ohtani?
So my first one is please hurry up. Like, I think that what's going to happen is that a lot of teams are waiting for Shohei to sign, and then the dominoes are going to start falling. So that's just what I'm gathering here. And by the way, the bidding is ridiculous. Like, he's probably going to get like $600 million, which is absurd. But I mean, he's that type of talent, I guess. But as for what team he's playing for, and I hate to stick to it, but staying in LA, he's going to the Dodgers. I mean, fortunately, No, you can dance around it all you want. You say maybe the Blue Jays have a chance, or you know, some people are still holding out hope Steve Cohen's gonna open his checkbook. But I just have a feeling the Dodgers are. It seems like the Dodgers are, if they don't get Shohei, they're going to try to get Yamamoto, and then they're going to re-sign JD Martinez. So they're going to land the big fish no matter what. It's pretty much, but I can't see anyone outbidding him. Outbidding the Dodgers for his services. Plus, I mean, LA is like at most an hour away from Anaheim, depending on traffic.
All right, so I'm going to roll next. My three words are Toronto Blue Balls. Yeah, there's been a lot made these last few days about the Blue Jays being in on both Juan Soto and Shohei Ohtani. And I'm here to dump rainwater on this. That's not happening. There is zero chance either of those things happen. Sorry, Toronto. You're not getting either of these guys. San Diego is not interested in Alek Manoah. I can promise you that. Now,
I don't know he might if go to the Yankees, really.
So he's going to play six games in Toronto and absolutely murder your franchise. But you're not getting Juan Soto. Sorry. And Shohei Ohtani is not going to Toronto. It's tough finding a spot for Ohtani because I'm going to make a very odd comparison, but follow me along here. It's kind of like Brock Bowers in the NFL draft, that you obviously know the exceptional talent, but it's when does he go in the draft, right? So Brock Bowers is a tight end at Georgia, and to me, he's the best prospect or second best prospect in the draft, but he's a tight end, so you don't know what you're doing there. And with Ohtani, everyone probably wants his services besides the A's, because they have to like mortgage the entire future of the franchise to pay him $5. Good job, Oakland. Well, not for much longer, at least. But I don't know. He's not going to Toronto. I think you could just start marking teams off. Toronto, you can mark off. John Morosi, sorry, is saying that Braves are engaged in a Shohei Ohtani's camp. I'm just going to assume everyone's involved in Shohei Ohtani's camp to some degree. So I don't think that report is meaning anything. I'm leaning Dodgers, I guess. The Mets are quote unquote out on Ohtani. But again, who do you trust in this, you know, reporting world, this journalism world? Because at a certain point, you can't really trust anything, because players can make new decisions and things change and money changes. And you have, you know, offers change, player situations change. Carlos Correa fails two physicals. So maybe Ohtani signs with the Mets. They find he has a bone bruise in his left femur, and then he leaves and goes to the Twins. I don't know.
And also, I just saw from Mark Bowman that apparently the Braves haven't shown interest in Ohtani. So I'm all sorts of confused. Because also now there's talk that the Giants are in on him. Like Logan Webb is trying to recruit him. And, you know, Shohei followed Logan Webb on Instagram today or something. But this is going to to be earth shattering no matter what.
I found my favorite one of those tweets earlier today, where Jose Caballero followed Shohei Ohtani. And so I started freaking out saying, "He's coming to Seattle, boys." I'm
like, yes, shocker. Shohei Ohtani follows a guy that finished top three in NL Cy Young voting this year.
Oh, no.
I do want to throw it out there. At least according to Fox Sports, the Dodgers are the favorite at plus 115. The Cubs are second at plus 350. The Rangers are third at plus 650. Imagine that lineup. That would be
apparently the Rangers dropped out, though.
That would be absolute filth. I don't know when this article was updated Saturday, so who knows. The Cubs are odd to me. You have this Seiya Suzuki factor, and then Chicago's a huge city, but I don't know. I don't see it with Chicago. I honestly don't see it with any team, but of course he's going to have to go to one. So it's kind of NBA draft lottery, that you don't expect any individual team to win it, but one team has to win it. Blue Jays are fourth. Mets are fifth, Giants six, Yankees seven, Red Sox eight, Mariners, Phillies, Angels tied nine.
That feels low.
Yeah, I agree. The Red Sox, a decent Red Sox have spot there.
They also have a reputation with Japanese baseball players. Like, you'd figure they'd be higher up.
So does Seattle. Yeah.
So does
San Diego, 25-1. Any other team is 25-1. I don't know. I think you're right, Mac. It's probably Dodgers. Like, I would say they have a better than 50% chance to get him, but I think he'd be fascinating in Texas.
Please no. Please no. No Texas team needs to have Shohei Ohtani. Just please, please, for the love of everything, please no.
I honestly think he's going to go to Savannah Bananas and bring them.
True.
I was thinking he's going to the Macon Bacon.
I thought it was the Portland Pickles.
Yeah. What about the, is it the Charlotte? Oh, frick. It's the, is it Charlotte Peacocks? It's the,
what, the Fayetteville Woodpeckers?
No, it's the Turkey somethings. Okay. This is going to frustrate me. It's like the Carolina Turkey. It's like in the same vein as the Portland Pickles and the Savannah Bananas, and it's just like a fun team. The Carolina Turkey somethings. I sound like an idiot right now. So we're going to move on.
The Disco Turkeys.
Yeah, the Disco Turkeys. That's right. Okay.
That's fun.
So Shohei Ohtani is taking his talents to the Carolina Disco Turkeys. So speaking of talent, let's talk about one guy who was compared to Ted Williams once, and one guy who won a World Series. He's young. He walks a lot. Yankees fans don't want to trade Michael King for him. That's Juan Soto. So, fellas, the Juan Soto trade package is getting to be a mammoth proposition. Allegedly, the Padres want 7 players from the New York Yankees. They want four guys, 2 prospects, and a pitcher, something along those lines. So, Mac, tell me what your expectations are for the Juan Soto package.
This is pretty easy. Way too much. I'll just say it. I can't see Soto taking an extension from any team, really. So whatever team gets them is basically paying for a rental. And they're going to give up so much money for someone who, not money necessarily, but they're going to be giving so much of their prospect capital and from their major league roster that it's going to be probably too much for a guy who might not be on your team past 2024. So I think, I mean, just looking at their ask for the Yankees, I mean, asking for Drew Thorpe and Michael King and Clark Schmidt and, you know, 4 other prospects probably. I think it's ridiculous. I think either AJ Preller is using the Yankees for leverage or he's just being unrealistic right now, because I think Soto will likely test free agency no matter what.
So my 3 words, actually very similar to Max here, are way too expensive. Like, that's exactly my thought process too here, is that hearing about everything that's been going on, I also wanted to make my 3 words, lol, 7 players. But at this point, like, yes, is he worth it? Yes, he is, but not for 1 year of Juan Soto. And that's for 6 years of Juan Soto would you pay that kind of price tag for. Like, the only way how you make this deal happen is if you've already basically agreed on an extension with Juan Soto after the trade has been accepted, or before the trade has been accepted, then just not published yet. Like, we're talking, I remember back at the trade deadline this year, we're talking about the potential of Shohei Ohtani getting moved, right? And we had the same argument there. The package that would need to be made in order to bring Shohei Ohtani to any other team basically included having your number one guy, a number one prospect, and more. And we all just kind of agreed it's not going to happen. Like, and I said the only way that it does happen is if you've already also made an agreement to sign him and to make a full-on extension with it, because otherwise you're paying a king's ransom for 1 year of a kingdom. It doesn't work out that way. It doesn't work out for your team at all. You're mortgaging the entire future on a gamble, on one gamble. And with how free agency has treated a lot of players and is about to treat Shohei Ohtani, that looks pretty pretty tempting if you are one Juan Soto. So I think what you're doing right now is, if you're Soto, you aren't going to sign even if you are traded for, you're probably not going to sign. And that, unless it is to your dream team. And then at that point, if that becomes the case, no team would want to trade for him at that price tag.
And reminder that he turned down $440 million from the Nationals before he got dealt. So you already know his asking price for his next contract is going to be insanely high.
I'll
approach $500 million.
I agree with you, but at the same time, I also think that was also just more a bit of him wanting to get out of Washington.
And it was a 15-year deal.
That too. Mm-hmm. So under $30 million annually.
Yeah. So no, I think that was just more of, it's not, yes, the asking price is going to be extremely high, but at the same time, like, he just didn't want to play in Washington, and he wanted to make what he knew he was going to be worth. And at less than $30 million for a guy who is arguably the best pure hitter in the sport right now, probably, you're giving him over 30.
I'm going to go in a slightly different direction. My three words for the Juan Soto trade package, totally worth it.
Whoa. And
here's why. You are getting, through 3,000 plate appearances, one of the top 25 hitters in the history of the sport. Folks, don't overthink this. I understand it might be a rental, but guess what? You have the proposition here of, you get to have Juan Soto on your team for a year. You get to be in his ear all year. He gets to, you know, acclimate to his teammates, right? So I'm hypothetical. Let's say he goes to the Yankees. I think it's a pretty good pitch to Juan Soto, instead of like talking to him in free agency saying, hey, you're going to play 150 games with Aaron Judge this year. Well, more like 112, because he's probably going to get hurt, sadly. But you're going to play with Aaron Judge, and you're going to play with Garrett Cole, and you're going to help the Yankees go from this, you know, barely above 500 team to getting back in the playoffs. And I think that has to be something good of a pitch, having that year to say, hey, Juan, we're going to win more games with you than without you. We're probably going to make the playoffs, unless he goes to like Oakland. And we might win the World Series, depending on where he goes. So, hey, that's a great pitch. And if you are, and I know you're going to, you know, run through your prospect pool, and that's annoying and whatnot, but you are getting a guy who is 27th in the history of baseball in OPS. You're getting a guy who is top 20 in the history of baseball in on-base percentage, a career 524 slugging percentage, a guy who played 162 games last year, a guy who's walked 130 or more times each of the last three seasons, a guy with a 157 career OPS plus. Like, that's better than Hank Aaron. What are we doing here? You get the historically great player. You get the modern-day equivalent of Ted Williams. I understand it's going to be a lot, and it's 1 year, and it could be a rental, and it could backfire. But he is as good of a player as there is in Major League Baseball. He's coming off of a quote-unquote down season, and he had a 158 OPS plus, and that was like the 30th percentile if you look at like Fangraphs projections. He's that good. He's him. He is a World Series champion. He is a guy that's going to receive MVP votes for you. He might even win the darn MVP. The Yankees, get over it. Michael King, get over it. Like, just send what you need to send to get Juan Soto. He's going to hit 75 home runs.
Here's the thing, though, is that I don't think the Yankees are just Juan Soto away from being World Series team like, you know, they expect every year.
This is thing. True, but that's, they the are the Yankees.
Yes, I think matters. It's just here. That Judge and Soto occupy two spots in the lineup. There are, unfortunately, seven other spots in the lineup and a bunch of question marks. So you gotta, is it worth going for one player? I know the Padres are trying to get them to take Trent Grisham in the deal, but I mean, I don't know how much Trent Grisham can help the Yankees. So they would still have a lot of work to do. Would he be their starting
center fielder?
Oh.
Unless they sign Kiermaier. They're big on Kiermaier, I guess.
I mean, yeah, I guess he would be their starting center fielder, though.
So one thing I do want to say to you, Splash, here is I think I need to go back to listen to some of the old podcasts here. Because I have a memory here of I had used your exact same argument right there, talking about why a team should make a trade for Shohei Ohtani. And you said that that was a bad idea. And now you're saying the same thing for Juan Soto. And I think personally that Shohei Ohtani is a more valuable player than Juan Soto.
Okay, I have a fundamentally different perspective on Soto and Ohtani. I think one of these players is a winner, and your team gets better, and your culture gets better, and you can win a championship with that player, and the other player is too big for the franchise. I've said it before. It was one of my time to myself or whatever we call it. Great podcasting, by the way. But I said it that if the Braves were interested in Shohei Ohtani, I don't like that. I don't want a guy coming in to disrupt the culture and be bigger than the team, be bigger than the organization. And I think Juan Soto can come in and fit your culture. He is a winner. He is a proven playoff commodity. He, at 19, was hitting cleanup in the World Series. That's a Miguel Cabrera, Evan Carter, and Ty Cobb, I think. It was either Ty Cobb or Mickey Mantle.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
But I get it, and I understand Ohtani, the pitching, and he's more valuable from a war aspect, and he's going to win MVP, even as a DH potentially. But, man, Juan Soto does that every year. Like, Ohtani is coming off of his best season as a hitter. Soto's coming off of a middle-of-the-pack season as a hitter. You know, he's at his, like, quote-unquote lowest value potentially right now. Because, you know, he just finished sixth in MVP voting. Okay, pardon me. He just won a Silver Slugger. Like, come on.
And who won MVP?
Well, yes, I understand. But there's, to me, a larger aspect here. Soto's going to be cheaper than Ohtani. And Soto, we've seen, contribute to a winner and contribute to a winning culture and contribute to a team that started 19-31. And went on to win the World Series. And
so, okay.
Let me put this in perspective. Shohei Ohtani hits and pitches, but if the Angels were 19-31 and had the pieces around like the 2019 Nationals, that team goes off the rails. I don't think Shohei Ohtani is helping that team stay on the rails. I think Juan Soto can help the team stay on the rails. He's a competitor. I think Shohei Ohtani is just really, 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 really good at baseball.
I'm confused now.
So, okay, here, let me come back at you with this here real quick. So you're saying that he's a winner, and I agree with you. He is a winner. He has won a World Series. Good on him. Yes. It takes more than one player to win a World Series.
Absolutely. And
if you want to talk
about the 2019 Nationals were stacked.
If you want to talk about records when you're there, let's see here. When did he join the Padres again? What year was
2022.
Cool. Let's take a look at those. So those 2 years, he finished 89-73, which, you know, yeah, very good. Good on you.
Made the NLCS, yeah.
Made the NLCS. Good job. Last year, two games above 500, and that's including a lineup that was, in my opinion, and I think a lot of people's opinions, a lot better than that 2019 Nationals team.
I thought they were going to be on paper, at least.
They had more depth. They were a team that Mac picked to win the World Series. They were a team that all three of us picked to make the playoffs. I understand that.
That's what I'm saying here right now is that if you're going to say to me right now that he is a winner and Ohtani is not, and you think that Ohtani is too big for any one team, I disagree with that. I think that Ohtani is going to fit in with any team that he needs to. And right now, you take a look, I think that if you do put Ohtani in that 2019 Nationals team, I think he may be able to do the same thing because baseball is a team sport. It's not a one-man game.
I agree with you there. It's tough with the press that comes out about Ohtani, the stuff at the end of the Angels tenure. I don't know if that's, you know, the real thing. For all I know, it could be like smoke and mirrors, the Angels trying to distance themselves from Ohtani, vice versa. But there's just something rubs me the wrong way.
To be fair, the Angels were also an absolute mess this year.
This is true.
Yeah.
I can't blame him if he kind of wants to. You know, I mean, geez, I could go on for days about how, you know, the Angels go all in and then they completely fall apart and then they, for some reason, place all their players on waivers. It's like the Angels were such a dysfunctional mess that I can't really blame Ohtani if he wanted to sort of distance himself.
I'm not blaming Ohtani there. I don't know. I think there's there is a difference that the Ohtani, if you traded for him midseason, it was just half a season. While Soto, you get the full season. I will say that. But I don't know. I know I'm off on an island here, but I think the Ohtani stuff, there's something goofy. There's something fishy. There's something that gets to me. And with Soto, I know he's going to be 130 walks. He's going to hit 30 home runs. He's going to hit, 25 or 30 doubles. He's going to have a 900 OPS, depending on the ballpark he goes to. And I know he's going to help the – I'm not saying Ohtani doesn't help the team, but I think the – I don't think Soto is too big for the team. And I think that's important in a team sport, that if you're Ohtani, or if you're a teammate of Ohtani and he gets special media stuff and special this and special that and – catering to him. Like, if you're a secondary star on that team, like, what are we doing? If you're Mookie Betts or Freddie Freeman, those guys are outstanding baseball guys, not just players, but like guys in the baseball world. Does it rub you the wrong way if you're trying to share the field with a cultural megastar? Well, Juan Soto can go to New York with Aaron Judge or go to the Dodgers with Freeman and Betts. I don't think he's ruffling any feathers and causing any issues. I'm not saying Ohtani does. I'm just, I don't know. It just rubs me the wrong way, I guess. So I know that's
fair. I get it. I get it, what you're saying on it. I think at this point, I don't know how much I can agree with the argument there. I think that both players are absolutely incredible. I also agree very much so. Now, I've really come to respect Juan Soto on what he has done. I know I'll be the first one to say that a while back ago, I thought he was very overrated. But I very much come around to the fact that, he is arguably probably the best pure hitter in the sport right now. But I also think that if you're going to go for Soto, your best bet is not to trade for him now, because otherwise any team that trades for him right now is mortgaging the future for a gamble.
Yes, but I think there's value in taking that gamble and having that year of getting Soto to acclimate to the city, acclimate to his teammates, acclimate to the manager. I think that can matter. And he could leave, absolutely, but at the end of the day, you are quote unquote mortgaging the future for a guy that I think is worth it. You're a guy who is in theory a top 25 hitter in the history of the sport. Like, that's what you're mortgaging the future for. If it works out, great. If it doesn't work out, well, you got a top 25 hitter in the history of the sport. There's some value there, even if it's just one season, and your prospect pool is going to be revamped soon. You can make other moves. This isn't the only move you make. There are other, I'm not going to say cost-cutting measures, but you can, I would not recommend the Yankees do this, but in theory, the Yankees could add Soto and trade away some prospects and then trade Gleyber Torres and get some prospects in return there. So I wouldn't do that, but you could do something like that. Yeah, I would not recommend it. Gleyber Torres is quite good at baseball. With that said, quickly, let's touch on the Jackson Chourio contract. Man's got paid over $80 million after six games of AAA ball. Give me one word to describe your reaction to 19-year-old Jackson Chourio getting a contract larger than anything the Oakland A's have ever handed out.
I'll go first here. Crazy. This kid is 19 years old. Most 19-year-olds are in their freshman or sophomore year of college, probably studying for final exams at this point in the year. And this kid just got $82 million committed to him. So I'll say this. He is the second best prospect in baseball behind Jackson Holliday. So he has a ton of upside and is probably going to be in the majors to start the year. So the Brewers, they're pop committed now. And I'm really curious to see how he plays over this deal. Because like we were talking about earlier, we've seen it with Evan White. you know, and it, you know, that contract didn't pan out, or with John
Scott
Singleton or Scott Kingery. Yeah. So there's, it's, I don't know if I want to say high risk, but there's definitely high reward in this deal.
I think it worked out with Luis Robert. No,
he got signed 6 years, $50 million. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Alex, what say you?
My one word is risky. It is, I think it very much is a high risk, high reward deal because, like you said right now, new Braves legend Evan White is probably the best example of this in at least the most recent history, where he was a player that had a really good, like, showing in the minor leagues, played a little bit in the MLB, and signed a huge mega deal, expecting to be the first baseman of the future, and then his hip decided to say, lol, nah, fam. And it's very much, we've seen times where it's worked out amazingly well. Louis Bob's one of them. We've seen times where it has not worked out well. So this is really going to come down to, because we've also seen a lot of players decline this kind of deal. Jared Kelnick was one of those players. So right now, honestly, like I said, it's already signed and sealed, ready to go. But at the same time, this is risky on mostly on the team here. The player right now, he just cashed out fantastic. But there's still a huge level of risk.
So my word is compensating. This is a move the Brewers make to satisfy the people that are mad that they non-tendered Brandon Woodruff and aren't going to extend Corbin Burnes. And
lost their manager.
Yeah, and let Craig Counsell
to a division rival.
Yeah, let him go to the Cubs. And like this is just like, I come in peace. You lose to David Stearns. I come in peace, Milwaukee management, by paying a 19-year-old $80 million. Look, as far as I'm aware, this guy is the second coming of Ronald Acuna, who I think Ronald Acuna is pretty good at baseball. You should check out his foreign league highlights. The man's incredible.
Didn't he get hit recently?
He got hit on the hand, and it's like he got pulled from the game. And I didn't wasn't on Twitter for like the backlash, but this is why Acuna is mad when you throw inside, because he gets hit half the time. And it, like, the Pete Alonso thing, remember that? That whole ordeal?
He
missed
yes,
a week.
I do.
Sorry,
Matt.
He missed like a week or two. Like, if you're a player, why do you want to get hit on the hands? Right? I know that's how you attack Acuna, allegedly, but like, there has to be some frustration there. And he gets hit. But, anyways, I think Jackson Churia, I think the contract, it's a smart play. And with the money coming into baseball, even if it doesn't work out, I don't think it's a. It obviously would end up being a bad deal if it doesn't work out, of course, but I don't think it's cataclysmic, right? If it doesn't work out, okay, great. You're paying a guy $10 million to be mid or $10 million to be a quadruple A level player. There are worse players to give money to in baseball. So bet on the talent, bet on the young guy, bet on Acuna 2.0, I guess. Is Julio Acuna 2.0 and then Churio is Acuna 3.0?
I think Julio's going to be better than Acuna.
I want to disagree with, but Julio plays center and Michael Harris plays center for Atlanta, so maybe, but who knows? All right.
I mean, two great players anyway.
Yeah, yes. I mean, it doesn't matter. You're still getting an amazing
player.
Listen, Acuna can still play center, but you have Michael Harris,
better range, I think. Yeah.
Man, he's everything I wish Christian Pache was. Philly's legend. Anyways, Alex, I heard through the grapevine that you have trivia. Can you confirm or deny?
I can confirm that I do not have trivia. No, I'm kidding. Yes, I have trivia.
Okay, so. I will hand over the hosting reins to you. Sorry to the listeners for the dip in podcast quality. I'm kidding. It'll actually improve because I'm not talking.
That's really sad. Don't say that again, please. Anyway, hello everyone. It is true. It's time for trivia, and we're going to do things a little bit differently. We're going to go back to a form that I brought up a while ago here. And what I mean by that is that we're going to do a trivia category where the two contestants will not be able to hear each other's answers. They are going to do this separately. Here, one is going to be on mic, one is not going to be. And they're both going to answer the same thing, and whoever gets the best answer will win. On this, the best answer, or I should say the best score. So I'm only going to give you a category here, and then we're going to flip to the side who goes first. The category is lineups.
Oh, boy.
Lineups is the category. So I'm going to flip a coin. Splash, I want you to call it heads or tails.
Heads.
It is tails. All right, Mac, would you like to go first or would you like to go second?
I'm actually going to defer here.
They're going to defer. Okay, so I'm going to need you to... I'm going to need you to go ahead and mute your microphone and mute your sound as well. Give me a thumbs up once you're good. Okay. All right, make sure you can't hear anything. He's not responding, so we're good to go there. All right. So, Splash, I'm salty now. I have been salty for a while.
I'm also salty, pal.
Yep, same. But... because I am salty, I'm subjecting you guys to it. I found something kind of interesting today that I took a look at the 2023 Seattle Mariner opening day lineup. I want you to tell me what that lineup was because there's a lot of players that aren't there anymore.
Okay.
So you don't have to give me the exact order. I mostly just need positions.
Okay.
And for this one as well, I'm looking for 10, which includes all the fielders and the DH. That includes the pitcher as well.
Okay. So if I get the right player, wrong position, how is that scored?
That's fine. Yeah, I'll give it. If you give me the right player, then you're fine. So
okay. Now I got to remember. See, I hate teams that platoon, because. Like, say the Braves started Marcell Ozuna in left field one game early in Washington because they were playing a left-handed hitter or a left-handed pitcher, and you didn't have Eddie Rosario in the lineup. But regardless, so Seattle, catcher Cal Raleigh, first base. I'm blanking on his name. We're going to come back to first base. Second base, Brewers legend Colton Wong. Third base, Eugenio Suarez. Shortstop, J.P. Crawford. Left field, Jared Kelnick. Center field, Julio Rodriguez. Right field, Teoscar Hernandez. First base, Ty France. Starting pitcher, Robbie Ray. And designated hitter... we're going to go designated hitter. Mike Ford wasn't there yet. Designated hitter. I guess Dylan Moore. I guess best case scenario there is Moore played right field and Teoscar was your DH. Or he played left and Kelnick was your DH, but yeah, that's my final 10. Raleigh, France, Wong, Crawford, Suarez, Kelnick, Rodriguez, Teoscar, Robbie Ray, and Dylan Moore.
All right, thank you very much for that, Splash. I'm gonna ask you to now mute as we ask Mac to come on back. Thank you very much. Hello there, Mac. Hello.
Hello.
All right. So I'm salty right now. I'm very salty. And because of that, I'm now going to subject you guys to my salt here as, you know, the 2023 Seattle Mariner opening day lineup was very interesting. There's a lot of players that aren't here anymore. I'll tell you what. Tell me what the 2023 Mariner opening day lineup was.
Oh, my God. Off the top of my head.
Off the top of your head. So I want you to go position. Like, you don't have to go position by position. But I want you to get all the fielders, starting pitcher, and DH. So you're going to have 10 total names that you're going to put down. If you give me a name and a position, but it's the wrong position, I will give you the point anyway. As long as you have the right, mostly I just need the right players.
All right.
All right. So you can start whenever you're ready.
All right. So obviously catcher Cal Raleigh.
Yep.
First base Ty France.
Yep.
Second base Colton Wong. Third base Eugenio Suarez.
Yep.
Shortstop JP Crawford. Try and do some thinking here. Left field, I believe, was Jared Kelenic.
Mets legend, Mariners legend, Braves legend.
Okay. Center field is Julio Rodriguez.
Yep.
Right field, Teoscar Hernandez. And designated hitter, a legend in the tri-state area, from North Jersey, Tommy La Stella.
All right. And you're still missing starting pitcher.
Oh, Luis Castillo.
All right, Castillo. All right. And with that, I'm going to ask Splash to come back. All righty. Once he comes back here, we'll continue on here. But yeah, I'm a bit salty because, as you can tell from that line, hello there. All righty. So we'll get to what I was about to say in a moment. So I have the scores here and we have a winner. So we don't need to go to what my tiebreaker was, thankfully. But the winner of the trivia for today is Mac.
Let's go.
Mac won it, getting 10 out of 10.
Was it AJ Pollock?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Splash, never mind. You missed two. You got 8 out of 10.
Okay.
The two that you missed, Splash, were the starting pitcher, as it was Luis Castillo, and the designated hitter was Tommy La Stella.
Oh my! Okay.
When I saw that name, I knew I needed to make a trivia for today. I knew I had to.
So full disclosure, earlier today, like this afternoon. Pretty sure I saw the same tweet you did, Alex, where it has
gotcha.
Like half the lineup that isn't on the team anymore.
Yeah, that was.
I'm honestly surprised, though, that I remembered all 10 names.
To be fair, La Stella was the one that I was confident Braves nobody legend. Was going to get. But because I feel like at this point now, all of us have just kind of repressed him from our memories.
Well, but the thing is that he's a. Like I said, he's kind of local for me.
Literally,
like across the river. went to the same middle school that some of my friends went to. But also, it's kind of hard to forget when one player looks kind of out of place in a lineup and not sure he should be a starting DH. With all due respect,
I'll throw it out there.
It's not 2019.
Batting Colton Wong second is quite a choice.
Sorry, say that again.
Batting Colton Wong second is quite a choice.
Batting Colton Wong second when you have Raleigh batting fifth and Suarez batting sixth and Crawford batting ninth is
I don't mind Crawford ninth, especially early on in the season when you didn't know he was the second best shortstop in the American League. France becoming the number two hitter on April 3rd makes a lot of sense.
Did J-Rod bat leadoff?
Jared started batting leadoff, but he did really well when he was batting in the two hole.
Yeah, I think that's going to be his spot going forward.
I agree. So, yeah,
this is why Acuna clears.
Nope, okay. Incorrect. Anyway, thank you both for
trivia.
Okay,
one of these players won an MVP. The other is named Julio Rodriguez.
One of these players won MVP, and one of these players hasn't torn his ACL. Anyway,
that is incredibly disrespectful. but then again, if you're gonna bash Acuna. How are you trying to elevate Julio over him? But we live in a world that Acuna won an MVP despite tearing an ACL. But J-Rod has not torn an ACL and has not won an MVP. What are we doing here? The reigning MVP was injured the whole year. Or
I'm just
half
having
year.
Fun with you. Anyway. All right.
Also, prayers up to Trevor Lawrence.
True.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Anyway, thank you so much for letting me do a trivia here today. Mac, again, congratulations.
Thank you.
Splash,
thank you.
I hand it back to you.
Hello, friends. Jim Nance, Phil Sims here. One of my favorite things Jim Nance does is talk to the audience. He had a pretty touching tribute after the national championship game, UConn, go Huskies. So we're going to do our little tributes today. We call them moment to ourselves. Would any of you like to go first? If not, I would like to go first.
Go for it, man.
Okay. Go on ahead.
So I'm going to count myself down. 3, 2, 1. Rest in peace to the Pac-12, man. As an alum of a Pac-12 school, and Alex can testify, although Alex, without being disrespectful, was it Pac-12 when you were there or still Pac-10?
Pac-12, yeah.
Okay. Man, I was tearing up after the last game on the Pac-12 network. They aired a tribute to the Pac-12, and you have all of these great moments from the schools. You know, you have Washington winning the national championship. You have Arizona, Arizona State, USC, UCLA, Colorado, Utah, Stanford, Cal, Washington State, Oregon State. And there's a picture of the Oregon Duck and the Oregon State Beaver, kind of like the bro pose, like the arms around each other and just like staring off in the distance. So that made me really sad, man. And Friday night after the Washington Oregon game, you had all the mascots in the corner together taking pictures. And that's just, man, I understand college football is about the money and not about the athletes and not about any other sports. I get it. And it's going to be helpful for evaluating quarterbacks because Caleb Williams is going to have to play against Iowa now, or in theory against Iowa instead of getting to play Arizona State. Bear down, go Cats, by the way. But man, it sucks that the sport I really liked as a kid and a sport that I invested all of the hours in playing NCAA football and the Road to Glory and Dynasty and, you know, winning national championships with Old Dominion, right? And it's just kind of, it's not the same anymore. At least this year, Georgia's not going to win the national championship, but it's not going to be the same when you have a 9 a.m. Pacific kickoff for UCLA Rutgers next year. I get it. College football is a business, and you have to make smart financial decisions, and you're going to get expanded playoff, and it helps out, I guess, but it just sucks that you're not going to have Oregon State playing. It sucks that you're not going to have Washington State playing. Arizona State sticks around, but these other matchups, these other rivalry games, they're gone. Like, when's the next time Oregon and Oregon State are going to play? They are in the same bloody state. Same with Washington State. And I think you lose a lot of what makes college football special when you try to sterilize it and you try to get these 16-team conferences and you put everyone together and, oh, we're going to do these pods like the Big 12 is trying to do. And it just, I just wish it was, I guess you can expand the playoff, whatever, but I'm going to miss the Pac-12, man. So
one thing I do want to give a quick little addendum on that. Washington and Washington State will still be playing for the next 5 years. They signed an agreement.
Oh, that's good.
Still keep the Apple Cup going, although to be fair, I'm not sure how much I want to watch it after everything that's going on. But I think I still will. But
also, shout out to Mike Leach. They were circulating the mascot, like the fight, the like how he would rank the mascots in a fight. And that's just, if there was ever a Mike Leach like clip, it was that one.
Yep, 100%. Absolute gold.
And that's the only time the Sun Devils are beating the Wildcats anytime soon. So there you go. Alex, Mac, one of you may go. The other can wait.
I'll go next.
All right.
Yep, go ahead.
All right. Do I have my countdown or just go for it?
Trace, dose, uno, proceed.
I'm going to kind of keep on the train that Splash was on here, but I'm going to be on a different side of it. I'm angry. I'm still very angry about the Pac-12 leaving. Because at this point, it's very clear it was about money, but at the same time, you still have, I'm not going to say you have an obligation to you know, keep baseball, to keep it going and all that. But at the same time, if you're doing this and you are doing this knowing that you are not just hurting yourself, you're just hurting or affecting yourself, you're affecting an entire conference. Now we're going to be now seeing Washington State and Oregon State playing probably independent or mid or Mountain West, which is going to tank recruiting. And it's all because at this point, these other conferences didn't want these two teams. And yet both of them were ranked at some point last year. WSU was ranked near the beginning of the year, and Oregon State, I think, finished ranked. Like, what are you doing at this point? I've said all that's already been said. Everything's already gone through. At this point now, it's just being angry. And I feel tired of being angry about this. Next year is going to suck. I'm going to be honest with y'all. Like, next year is going to suck for college football. Maybe just for me because I'm a WSU fan. But at the same time, like, just seeing the history of all that just go away. I couldn't bring myself to watch the game, the Pac-12 game. I just couldn't. Knowing what both of those two schools did, knowing that it was the final game because of them, I just couldn't do it.
Yeah, that one hurt. I didn't realize that, but also Arizona would have won the Pac-12 South, but the Pac-12 did away with divisions, so that sucks. Mac,
yeah,
it's up to you. I know you're not a Pac-12 grad, but
I know free. I'm not. All right.
So
count me down.
San R.E., proceed.
All right, so I'll be a little all over the place here. My first thing is that I did an adult thing this weekend and moved out of my parents' place. So I am living with two other people now. That was obviously kind of a big moment in my life. But I was going to talk a little bit about college football too, which is Syracuse has a new head coach. I'm really excited about Fran Brown. It's just awesome seeing that five-star football recruits want to come to Syracuse now. But I also am thinking about next year too, sort of what you guys said, that we're going to have teams from California coming all the way up to Syracuse to play football games in the future, which is going to be a rude awakening for them, coming from sunny California to freezing cold Syracuse, where there's snow on the ground starting November 1st until probably about May 1st. So, I'm confused as heck. I'm looking forward to Syracuse progressing. It's been kind of frustrating watching a team go 500 every year or worse than 500. But also, I'm all sorts of confused as to why SMU, granted they're in Texas, why SMU, Cal, and Stanford are now in the Atlantic Coast Conference. Granted, Syracuse should not be in the ACC either. So honestly, at this point, what do conferences even mean? That's my parting thought.
Yeah.
Okay. I will say we should have promotion relegation in college football. I think that makes it fun. That'd be cool.
Interesting.
Arizona's 9-3 season would have been in the Mountain West instead of the Pac-12 because they've been horrible the last couple of years, but I digress. That'd be fun. I wish that was something you could do in the next college football game that comes out. I'm really excited for that. But you know what else I'm excited for? The future of this podcast. So to help us out, can you drop a 5-star review? Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. Tell us, like, Ryan, you suck. That's fine. I'm open to that. You can follow us at LAR_baseball on the Bird app, also known as X. Thank you, Elon Musk, I guess. You can follow Alex at TheSportsGuy242. You can follow Mac at Matthias_A_K. Try to spell Matthias right. I always spell it the wrong way every single time without fail. It's like the USB.
Unreal,
port.
Man.
Yeah. even when I spell it right, it doesn't pop up when I'm trying to tag you on Twitter. So, like, Twitter's like screwing with me too. You can follow me at Mr. Splashman19. And if you have a will to continue living, good for you. I hope you succeed in your life. So, with that said, thank you guys for listening. Alex, roll the outro.
Alex, Splash, and Mac talking sports at the end of the day. That is the best way to play. Yeah.